From WYPR, I'm Sheila Cast. We're on the record. More than 4,600 children in Maryland live in out-of-home placements such as foster care, and studies show that LGBT youth tend to be overrepresented in the foster system. Judith Shagrin is the Assistant Director for Children's Services in Baltimore County. She gives us an overview of the training potential foster parents undergo. And we hear from former foster youth who identify as LGBT. Antonio Monteiro describes the turning point when he was placed with a foster parent who accepted him.
She waited until I came to her to say something. And she definitely said that she is fine with it. She didn't care because she was more focused on my future and everything that I'm doing now, making myself better.
It's On the Record after the news.
You're listening to On the Record, the podcast, a service of your public radio, 88.1 WYPR. Find more podcasts online at wypr.org. And tell us what you think. Send an email to ontherecord@wypr.org.
Good morning, I'm Sheila Cast. We're On the Record. The foster care system aims to care for some of the most vulnerable individuals in our society, abused and neglected children, children who need adults to stand up for them. The Maryland Department of Human Services says that as of August, more than 4,600 children in the state were living in out-of-home placements. A study conducted by researchers at UCLA found that one out of five foster youth in Los Angeles County, home to the nation's largest population of foster youth, identified as LGBT. Researchers also found that LGBT foster youth have a less stable experience than their straight counterparts. They have more foster care placements, they're more likely to live in group homes, and are three times more likely to be hospitalized for mental health issues. Judith Shagrin is the Assistant Director for Children's Services for Baltimore County. She oversees the county's foster care and adoptions program, which includes the approval process for foster parents. We asked her here today to talk about how children are matched with foster parents and how Baltimore County strives to make sure children are comfortable in their placements. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for being here. Give us a snapshot of the foster care program in Baltimore County.
We have currently roughly 590 children in foster care in Baltimore County. We have roughly 50% of those children are over the age of 14. 25% are between the ages of 18 and 21. Children can stay in foster care until 21 in Maryland. We've always been a rather generous, fortunately, state. Kids could use a longer period of time, but at least Maryland has always let kids stay until 21 with some fairly flexible benefits available to support them.
How do you recruit foster parents?
Whatever way we can. We advertise, we encourage foster parents to recruit friends. We're willing to go into a community and present at a church group, a neighborhood center. We go to fairs. We advertise on the internet. Whatever we can do to get the word out that there are children in need, we take advantage of that.
And what kind of training do foster parents get?
Maryland requires that foster parents get 27 hours of pre-service training. In Baltimore County, we add an additional 3 hours for what we call family-centered practice, so that we prepare families for fostering the children coming into our care and for working closely with our social workers to provide the best care possible to the children and to their families.
Tell me a little bit more about what goes on in that 30 hours then. I mean, what
is it? It's a lot. From the nuts and bolts of providing foster care to what is a family team meeting, how does the agency work, what will happen when you get a call from us. There's a prescribed curriculum called the Pride Training that has sort of prescribed chapters for each section having to do with what to expect when you're fostering. And of course, when you get a child in your home, all that training goes out the window, but our intent is to well prepare people before a child is placed in their home.
And then take me to that point. How is it decided with whom to place a child?
You know, I sometimes think of it as an arranged marriage, that when a child comes into our care, we may have very little information about them. So using that very little information, we attempt to make the best match possible with a placement provider. In Maryland, local departments license what we call regular foster homes, and then we can purchase treatment foster care. Treatment foster care is intended to provide care for children all of our kids are special and have some special needs, but treatment foster parents are at least theoretically equipped to meet higher intensity needs, and they receive a higher difficulty of care subsidy in order to meet those children's needs. We do try first to find relatives, though, who the child is able to safely live with when a decision is made that a child will need to leave their family's home. So first preference is relatives. It's so much easier for a child to leave home into the care of someone they know and they love. But otherwise, we're looking at a foster family. We may or may not have a good match for them in our agency. If they have some higher intensity needs, we'll be working with one of the private treatment foster care programs to try to make as good a match as possible, try to sustain a child in the community that they're coming from. But when it's an emergency, we may not be able to make the best match possible.
That's Judith Shagrin, Assistant Director for Children's Services in Baltimore County, here on The Record on WIPR. I'm Sheila Cast. We're talking about efforts to make sure that all children feel accepted and comfortable in foster care. Does the training include home visits?
The licensing process, the approval process, includes home visits, that there's a social worker assigned who does go to their home at least 3 times to visit. But the training itself is almost sort of a classroom setting.
And does it include anything about LGBT issues?
Yes. We consider all of our children special, and our goal is to meet their individual needs. But we want to be sure that our foster parents understand the broad breadth of needs. And as part of our training, we do talk about LGBTQ youth and their need for reasonable and prudent parenting and their need for ordinary parenting like every other child.
So can prospective foster parents discuss whether they are comfortable or not?
We encourage them to have that discussion with us, in part because as part of our approval process, we want to be sure that families are prepared to foster the children who come into our care. If there is a family who feels really strongly that they would not feel comfortable fostering an LGBTQ youth, we may question whether we're actually able to work with them, because we never know. It's not like kids come in with a sign on their forehead that says, oh, I'm transgender, oh, I'm gay. Kids coming out is often a process, and we don't want a child to be in a family home in which that process can't be respected. So we may say, fine, we won't place an LGBTQ youth in your home, but that's just not realistic because we don't know who that child is when they come into our care. And to the extent possible, we want families prepared to care for kids unconditionally.
How long do most children stay with their foster parents?
It varies tremendously. There are the positive outcomes that the child remains in the same foster home until permanence is achieved. Most ideally, the child returns home. But if the child is unable to return home, our goal is for that child to have permanence, most ideally through adoption by that foster parent, if we haven't been able to find a relative. And if the foster parent isn't able to make the commitment of adoption, and more so the child isn't prepared to consent if they're over a certain age, then we may go with what's called custody and guardianship as a permanent plan. We don't want the state to be raising children. So our goal is timely permanence. And in Baltimore County, the length of stay is roughly a year and a half, but that's I want to say average. We have kids who come in, stay for 6 months. We have others who stay for a significant period of time. We don't have kids who stay for a lifetime, I'm glad to say.
And you made clear that reuniting foster children with their birth families is the primary goal. How often is that What happens?
It depends very much on the age of the child. It feels like we have two separate foster care systems. One serves younger children whose parents are often substance abusers, and the male treatment is related to the substance abuse. We don't remove children because their parents do drugs. We remove children because they are at risk of harm and they are unsafe. But the younger kids, their families tend to be drug involved. The older youth tend to come from families where they have struggled over the years. The youth may have experienced multiple traumas through their life and is now having some really serious adjustment issues.
Thank you for this overview. We're going to take a quick break here. Judith Shagrin, Assistant Director for Children's Services in Baltimore County, is going to stick with us. And when we come back, young adults who identify as LGBT will tell us some of what foster care was like for them. I'm Sheila Cass. Stay with us.
This is the On the Record podcast, a service of Your Public Radio, member-supported 88.1 WYPR. You can support this podcast and everything you hear from WYPR. Become a member. Come to WYPR.org and click the donate link.
Welcome back to On the Record. I'm Sheila Cast. For young people in the foster care system who come from homes of instability or abuse, feeling safe is paramount. And for LGBT kids in foster care who may or may not be out, feeling like they can't safely be themselves can be an enormous stress. With me is Judith Shagrin, Assistant Director for Children's Services in Baltimore County. Joining us is Antonio Monteiro, who went into foster care in Prince George's County at age 12. Now he's 26 and identifies as bisexual. Thanks so much for being here.
Thank you.
And with us by phone is Sheila Kalatsis. Sheila is 35 years old. She's gay, and she was primarily raised in kinship care, out of home care with a relative. Welcome to the show, Sheila.
Thanks for having me.
How old were you when you entered foster care?
In Baltimore County, I was 12, but I've been in kinship care. I was 3 years old, and then I went back into the foster care system at 12 and came back with that kinship provider, I believe, at 13, and aged out at 21.
So a big part of your childhood was in foster care. What was your experience like?
It was, for me, good. I joined the youth advisory board. I made friends. I listened to my social worker, and I tried to use the system to my advantage as much as possible. What I mean by that is not a bad thing, but when you're a foster child, certain things are out there. So, you know, you don't have much of a family, so you kind of make, you know, the state your family and try to figure out, you know, what you got to do and how to survive.
Did your sexual orientation play a role in how you were treated in foster care?
No, but I mean, it was like, I've always been a tomboy, and I was pretty sure one of my foster sisters was actually a lesbian too, and she actually is bisexual apparently. It was never a thing brought up, and when I finally did come out of the closet, it was like, okay, you know, not a big deal. So it wasn't hard for me, in that sense. I never really had to hide it.
And how old were you when you came out?
18. But I'll be very direct and very honest with you. How long did I know that I liked girls? Pretty much since I was born. So it's something I always struggled with personally, but you don't know what it is. You don't know how to deal with it. You don't know how to talk about it. It was hard in that sense. And then you hear the people telling you how you're going to go to hell. You know, you go to some churches, and then you find out that that's the bad thing to be. But as I got older and it became more accepted, it wasn't that big of a deal. But that's why I kept it in so long, was fear.
Antonio, you were 12 when you went into foster care. What was your experience like?
So for me, it was kind of the opposite of Sheila's. It was terrible. Because being that young, I didn't know what I was. I just knew that I was more focused on school, and at the time, my mom had passed. So it was a lot going on for me, and their assumptions of who I was, they didn't directly come to me with their issues. They would go to the social worker and say something to her. So there was a time, I think I was like 15, and I went through like 12 foster homes in 1 year just based on that. There was one foster parent who did come to me and approach me about my sexuality, and she wanted to have this conversation. I didn't know her too well. I was only there for probably like a week or two. And I told her that that's not something that I'm focused on. You know, I don't know. And she also said that, you know, you can be condemned and all these things. And it was pretty tough, you know. But like Sheila said, once you get a parent that is okay with it, you know, and don't have any type of issues with that, it was smooth sailing after that. Maybe when I was 16 and I finally came across a foster parent who actually was somebody that I knew before. She was a teacher of mine, and we just, stars aligned, I guess. But it was amazing. You know, she was amazing. She still is amazing. And she really helped me throughout that process with being in foster care and being LGBT.
And she was explicitly accepting. I mean, you didn't just have to assume it, or, I mean, did you actually hear it?
With her, she never came to me about it. She never spoke about it. She waited until I came to her to say something. And she definitely said that she is fine with it. She didn't care because she was more focused on my future and everything that I'm doing now, making myself better. So she was more into my ambitions and dreams versus what I like in relationships.
This is On the Record on WIPR. I'm Sheila Cass speaking with Antonio Monteiro, who went into foster care in Prince George's County when he was 12. Now he's 26. Sheila Kalatsis is gay. She is 35 years old, was raised primarily in kinship care in Baltimore County. And Judith Shagrin is with us. She's Assistant Director for Children's Services in Baltimore County. We also spoke to Travis Jackson. He's from Baltimore City. He's 25 years old, is gay. At age 6, he was placed in out-of-home care. He bounced back and forth between foster care and group homes from the city to the county, back to the city, until he aged out of the system. Let's hear part of what he told producer Maureen Harvey.
When I was in group homes, like, you're around, like, straight or, like, cisgender men who is, like, uncomfortable with being around gay people, and they don't understand, like, we all live in this world. And so it's just like, you gotta get used to it. But like with me, being in group homes was like the worst experience, because like boys was like, I was the quiet type, so boys would always like try me or like bully me, and I was like just like non-existent, like didn't want to be bothered or anything. For me, I ran away from group homes because I didn't need to like them, or I felt unsafe, or like the staff just like wasn't there, and it wasn't like nobody there for me. Basically, for me, running away was a way, a means to escape what I was going through.
Judith, what kind of alarm bells go off when a kid runs away from their placement?
As this young man pointed out, we try to understand, what is the youth running to? Why are they running away? Where is the discomfort coming from? And attempt to address it. We often look at where a young person is running to, and whether that may actually be a resource that we could work with. So running away is one of the most troubling behaviors we deal with, because if we don't know where a young person is and we don't know that they're safe, we can't provide services, we can't work with them. But I have to tell you, in my 34 years, we have never figured out how to arrest that behavior. So running away is really tough. It's a signal that a young person isn't happy, and it's our job to figure out what that's about.
Antonio, did you ever run away?
So I definitely ran away. When I first got into foster care, and I was unhappy. It was not my family, you know, and like I said, I was dealing with my mom being gone, and they were very abusive. Like, in the middle of the night, I got hit, and yeah, so I didn't want to be there. And I went across the street to, I think I was at a Giant or something. I can't remember the store. But the woman, the cashier there, she kind of took me under her wing. And she called social services, and she waited there, and she fed me and did all these things. So she didn't let me go back to the house because of how scared I was. But definitely I can relate to the running away. When you're put in situations and people don't understand you, you know, and they're going out of their way to do stuff to harm you.
Sheila, I'm assuming you didn't run away, but why am I assuming that?
I never ran away for reasons of my placement being bad, but I was trying while being in a foster care placement to get back to that kinship provider. And there was a reason why I couldn't go back because of her husband. But I found out something had happened, and I took off running to try to get back to my aunt that
Your
was
family.
Care
yeah.
of me. So I just took off running.
So Travis Jackson, who aged out of foster care in Baltimore City, also described an all-too-common experience, homelessness.
When you transition out and you don't have a plan of what's going to happen in the next 3 to 4 years after you're 21, when that happened, I literally became homeless when I aged out because DSS did not have a plan for me. They didn't have a straightforward plan of, like, where you're going to go. Like, it's a lot. It's like you don't know where to look for houses. You don't know where to look for rooms, like, for rent. You don't know how to do any of that.
Studies find that between 20 and 40% of homeless youth identify as LGBT, and many have been in foster care. How does Baltimore County work to ensure that young people who age out of the foster care system have a plan?
Baltimore County has long been committed to specialized independent living preparation. And when young people are 18, 19, 20, we are talking about, where are you going to live? What are you going to do for a living? We're teaching budgeting skills. What is a lease? What is a loan? You can't teach independent living skills, but you can expose kids to the skills they'll need to live independently. And our goal when kids age out is to have a plan. We have transition meetings to talk about, where are you going to go? How can we plan for it? What are you going to need? We will pay for a security deposit for a young person to move into an apartment. We'll help them to furnish it. We work with some what are called off-site supervised apartment living programs. The young person is still in our care, lives in an apartment that's supervised by a program, and they can move on to their own apartment in their own name prior to aging out. So our goal is for our young people to be settled before they age out. But there's absolutely no doubt that transitional housing for youth, which is subsidized over a period of time, just would be enormously valuable. My stepson was a social worker in New York City. No young person aged out of their care without the option of a subsidized unit. And we have so little in the Maryland area.
Sheila, did you feel prepared when you aged out of the system?
I don't think there was ever any way to feel totally prepared to age out. One of my biggest things that really upset me was the health insurance. Because once you turn 21, goodbye health insurance. Where do you get that? Because most kids could, you know, stay on their parents' insurance. And I was, you know, in college and stuff like that, doing everything I was supposed to be doing. That if you had an actual parent, you know, you could stay on their health insurance. But my parent was the state, and the state said goodbye at 21.
How did you handle that?
To be honest with you, I never let go of my family from the state.
I think at one point we paid for you to get the insurance program through
yes.
your college,
which was my master's program, yes.
A bare bones program, but at least you had coverage. We have a program in Baltimore County, the Generous Juror Program, that allows jurors to contribute to a dedicated fund for foster children. And so we are able to tap into that sometimes for needs after youth have aged out.
Antonio, when you aged out of the system, did you feel ready?
Absolutely. With me, I've always been very independent, you know, and I wanted to be free. But in the process, I did have essential people in my life, like my lawyer. She was amazing, and she helped a lot prepare me mentally about where I wanted to go.
So what are you doing now?
So right now, I am starting my own business. And it's
what kind of business?
So it's a talent agency. I have a lot of friends that just, they do everything, like makeup and fashion and singing and acting and everything. But they don't have the ambition that I do. And I think that they need somebody like me to manage them.
Sheila, how about you? What are you doing now?
I'm a home health care provider. I absolutely love it. I've been doing it going on 6 years.
Sheila Kalantzis and Antonio Monteiro were formerly in foster care. They identify as LGBT. I'm so grateful to you for sharing your experience. Thank you.
Thank you, Sheila. Thank you so much for having me.
And thank you so much.
And Judith Chagrin is Assistant Director for Children's Services for Baltimore County, Maryland. Thanks a lot.
Thank you so much for your attention to our young people. I think sometimes people forget about them.
This is On the Record. I'm Sheila Kasten. Glad you're listening. Join us again tomorrow.
Thanks for listening to this segment of On the Record with Sheila Kast. You can catch the show on the radio Monday through Friday, 9:30 to 10 a.m. on 88.1 WYPR, your NPR news station. And you can support On the Record and all the other public radio programs that WYPR brings to you. Just click the donate link at the top of WYPR.org. And thanks.